and a great deal of proof, too, because they are complicated and can scarcely be made clear with the greatest care and the greatest dialectic skill. If proofs are necessary, so are doctrines, for doctrines deduce the truth by reasoning. Some matters are clear, and others are vague. Those which the senses and the memory can embrace are clear. Those which are outside their scope are vague. But reason is not satisfied by obvious facts. Its higher and nobler function is to deal with hidden things. Hidden things need proof. Proof cannot come without doctrines, therefore doctrines are necessary. That which leads to a general agreement, and likewise to a perfect one, is an assured belief in certain facts. But if, lacking this assurance, all things are adrift in our minds, then doctrines are indispensable, for they give to our minds the means of unswerving decision. Furthermore, when we advise a man to regard his friends as highly as himself, to reflect that an enemy may become a friend, to stimulate love in the friend, and to check hatred in the enemy, we add, this is just and honorable. Now, the just and honorable element in our doctrines is embraced by reason. Hence, reason is necessary, for without it, the doctrines cannot exist either. But let us unite the two. For indeed, branches are useless without their roots, and the roots themselves are strengthened by the growths which they have produced. Everyone can understand how useful the hands are. They obviously help us. But the heart, the source of the hand's growth and power and motion, is hidden. And I can say the same thing about precepts. They are manifest, while the doctrines of wisdom are concealed. And as only the initiated know the more hallowed portion of the rites, so in philosophy, the hidden truths are revealed only to those who are members and have been admitted to the sacred rites. But precepts and other such matters are familiar even to the uninitiated. Posidonius holds that not only precept-giving, there is nothing to prevent my using this word, but even persuasion, consolation, and encouragement are necessary. To these, he adds the investigation of causes, but I fail to see why I should not dare to call it etiology, since the scholars who mount guard over the Latin language thus use the term as having the right to do so. He remarks that it will also be useful to illustrate each particular virtue. This science Posidonius calls ethology, while others call it characterization. It gives the signs and marks which belong to each virtue and vice, so that by them distinction may be drawn between like things. Its function is the same as that of precept. For he who utters precepts says, if you would have self-control, act thus and so. He who illustrates says, the man who acts thus and so, and refrains from certain other things, possesses self-control. If you ask what the difference here is, I say that the one gives the precepts of virtue, the other its embodiment. These illustrations, or, to use a commercial term, these samples have, I confess, a certain utility. Just put them up for exhibition, well recommended, and you will find men to copy them. Would you, for instance, deem it a useful thing to have evidence given you by which you may recognize a thoroughbred horse and not be cheated in your purchase or waste your time over a low-bred animal? But how much more useful it is to know the marks of a surpassingly fine soul, marks which one may appropriate from another for oneself. Straightway the foal of the high-bred drove, nursed up in the pastures, marches with spirited step and treads with a delicate motion, first on the dangerous pathway and into the threatening river, trusting himself to the unknown bridge, without fear at its creakings, neck thrown high in the air, and clear-cut head, and a belly spare, back rounded, and breast abounding in courage and muscle. He, when the clashing of weapons is heard to resound in the distance, leaps from his place and pricks up his ears, and all in a tremble pours forth the pent-up fire that lay close shut in his nostrils. Virgil's description, though referring to something else, might perfectly well be the portrayal of a brave man. At any rate, I myself should select no other simile for a hero. If I had to describe Cato, who was unterrified amid the din of civil war, who was first to attack the armies that were already making for the Alps, who plunged face forward into the civil conflict, this is a